The Con Guy Show, the official program of theconguy.com, is heard on the We Be Geeks Collective and on sci-fi.radio.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi everyone, it's Nathan, host of the 42cast. Our second season is just underway, and it's never been a better time to check in on what we're doing. Whether it's talking about the latest movies from the MCU, watching the Arrowverse shows, talking about classics such as Star Trek and Doctor Who, playing 8-bit video games, or sharing celebrity interviews, the 42cast has something for everyone. So give it a listen, and discover why it's the ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. The 42cast is a proud member of the ESO Network.
We're the Con Guys, and this is the Con Guy Show, coming to you straight from the nerdy heart of Hollywood, California.
Hey, this is Jim with theconguy.com.
She's been here with theconguy.com.
Katie here, aka the Con Girl.
Zordon did not want five teenagers with attitude.
My name is Derek Sam.
I'm Danae Sam, and that's my brother.
We are your home for news, opinions, and interviews from the world of Comic-Cons and fandoms, your ultimate insiders for all things.
Welcome, everybody, to the Con Guys Movie Talk. We're trying something new. I mean, we always talk movies, but we're going to try something new here. This is where we jump headlong into the latest releases to give our somewhat honest opinions about the movies. And then we run and take cover to survive the onslaught of hate, rage, and ensuing toxic fandom that promises to destroy us and cancel us and curse our families and our loved ones. Because pop culture opinions are fighting words these days. But we're going to try to keep it on the up and up and just have a lot of fun. My name is Jim Fry. I am one of your hosts today. And let's start up here next to me. Who else do we have?
Cheeseman here with theconguy.com, screenwriter and social media director.
And coming to us very specially from Florida today.
Professor Thomas Parham at Blurred PhD, Professor of Communication Media Studies at Palm Beach Atlantic University in West Palm Beach. Holla!
And then last but not least, Ben.
Hello, it's me, old buddy Ben, and I do stuff all over. I've been in movies and TV and just, dudes, I just did stand-up comedy live in front of an audience of real people for the first time since the pandemic last week. It was awesome. I had a great time, had a great show. And actually, I've been talking with some folks about putting together some more stand-up comedy and stuff like that. So I'll let you know if you're LA local. We'll keep you posted for more shows. And I also do a bunch of stuff here at thathashtagshow.com, like smoking trolls on the internet and telling them they're wrong for hating things that are new.
And three comments real quick. Ben, we got a welcomer.
Blood good.
All right. And Jonathan Wilkerson, you're one show too early, but Halloween.
You're an hour early. We're going to do Scare Guy in an hour or 45 yep. minutes or so. So
we're doing a double feature tonight. And Matthew Baker, sup guys? You're all looking good and COVID free.
Yeah.
Fingers across, guys. Fingers
as far
across.
As we know.
As far as we know. But tonight we're talking about something that's kind of big on everybody's minds right now. This weekend, James Gunn reimagined, rebooted, regave us something that David Ayer back in 2016 gave us, Suicide Squad. At the time, it was one of the most highly anticipated movies coming out, superhero movies. I remember about it down at San Diego Comic-Con. That thing just was everywhere. Remember that, Tom? Were you down there that year?
I've been down at Comic-Con from 95 on until the pandemic hit. Thank you for having me, Jim.
Wow. Anyways, so Tom, why don't you real quick, before we jump into James Gunn's, masterpiece of a movie in some ways.
Tell us how you really feel, Jim.
But anyways, yeah. Tom, give us a little bit of how the reception went for David Ayer's Suicide Squad back in 2016.
in two words, hated it. It was the lowest ranked DCE. I think it's still the lowest ranked DCEU movie on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
And deserves that score. And now that we have witnessed the genius that is Zack Snyder's Justice League, which would have been more genius had it been shorter, but I still love it because it's not Justice League. Evidently, Warner's took final cutaway from Ayers, so his cut tested not great. Their recut tested not great. So Warner's, in their finite stupidity, merged the two cuts together into something that's really abysmal, and that's what we got.
But okay, and we don't want to spend a lot of time on that movie because we're not a podcast about hate. We are a podcast about opinions, but we have a very limited amount of time. We are doing quick shots today. But what is it that fell apart about that movie, Ben and Tom? What is it about the first Suicide Squad that probably didn't land with people?
Jared Leto is the Joker.
Ben, what do you think?
I've spoken on this before. Really quickly, I was in a movie with Jared Leto. That does not mean that I actually hung out with Jared Leto. I was on set at the same time as Jared Leto, or Leto. I'm not quite sure how you pronounce his last name. And I was one of the biggest haters of Jared Leto's Joker because I grew up on Jack Nicholson and Mark Hamill and Cesar Romero. I don't know why I was like Cesar Romero. And then of course Heath Ledger, and as I'm standing there on set, standing across the way watching Jared Leto shoot a scene 50 times over because they just kept doing take after take. All of a sudden it dawns on me, oh, this guy is a real person. Now he's also done some crazy stuff outside of the Suicide Squad and being the Joker. There's other stuff in his life that we could talk about all day, but. But it kind of hit home for me where I was like, oh, he's like a real person with flesh and a face and he breathes and like he's got arms and hands and like he's a real person. And I kind of had to step back and think about it from the perspective of an actor, which I am. This guy stepped into a position where they were like, okay, we're doing this whole new huge thing with the DC Comics movie franchise. We want you to take on one of the most, if not the most, iconic supervillain role that's ever been created, that has become iconic through Romero and Nicholson and Hamill and Ledger. And now you get to create a new one for this new huge thing that we're doing. And I know that some of it was out of his control and some of it was in his control. And he's probably kind of a weird guy. And so he came up with this weird idea of what he thought the Joker could be in his own take. But that's an incredible amount of pressure. Did it work? No. And he was like sending dead rats as gifts to like other members of the cast and that sort of thing, like behind the scenes. Like, yeah, there's like stories about like he sent gift wrapped rat carcasses to the rest of the cast because he was the Joker. Ways of getting into character, but at the same time, there's a lot of other hands in that pie.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest issue was, as you guys, as Tom, you guys all just mentioned, there were so many cooks in the kitchen on that movie. Even David Ayers, when the movie was about to release, distanced himself from his own movie and tweeted out, like, this is not my movie. It's terrible. Don't go see it. If, I'm paraphrasing. But I think now that we've seen James Gunn's version of the Suicide Squad, which is a sequel to that movie, I thought they were just starting over. But it is an actual sequel to the David Ayers Suicide Squad. I do feel like I want to see what David Ayer's actual director's cut of Suicide Squad was, because I know what we saw was like the Warner Brothers execs in their, infinite stupidity kind of hand in the pie cut. But in short, loved the James Gunn version. I have commentary, but let's move on to the rest of the guys.
We're gonna get onto it. So James Gunn's version of Suicide just hit us this past weekend. Supervillains Harley Quinn, Bloodsport, Peacemaker, and a collection of nutty cons at, not con guys, nutty cons at Bell Rev Prison join the super secret, super shady Task Force X as they are dropped off at the remote enemy-infused island of Corto Maltese for some kind of like unspecified mission that they've got going on there. I'm going to cut to Cheeseman real quick because I know that you've seen it twice so far. I have seen it once in a quarter because I saw it like close to midnight and I fell asleep and slept through the whole thing. So I saw it again today. But anyways, my opinion doesn't matter. Cheeseman, what do you think? And then we're going to cut to these guys.
I thought it definitely started off with a bang, had that James Gunn kind of feeling where it just was like a lot of fun, good balance of music, good balance of characters, bunch of misfits coming together. And it just really had that tone right off the bat, which really kind of from the beginning hooked you in and everything. And it really did a great job with these characters, especially Harley Quinn, who I think was by far the biggest standout with some of the scenes that they did, which I'm sure we'll get into. But for me, kind of midway through, though, it kind of lost a little of what it was doing in the first half, especially even with the music. Like, the music kind of shifted, in my opinion. But we can get more into this again later. But
yeah, let's save that. Let's do our quote-unquote circle of love right now and talk about all the things that it did right. Let's talk about what it did right. Who wants to go?
I'll go.
All right.
They brought they brought all these heroes to this to Corto Maltese, and then proceeded to kill almost all of them, at least in Team A, before we find out there is a Team B. Boom, boom, boom. The plot thickens. Oh, that wacky, manipulative Amanda Waller. I really like a lot of the actors from that first team, and I was sorry to see them go so quickly, especially Boomerang, since he was one of the few holdovers from the first movie.
Yeah.
And TDK, who is not, who's actually came from a Legion of Superheroes character, but it was still a fun character. Nathan Fillion got his cameo in a James Gunn movie, and we find out that TDK stands for the Detachable Kid, and he comes apart kind of like an action figure.
That was hilarious.
Javelin's costume was pretty cool, and just the actor's name, Flula Borg, intrigued me. So, and of course, he has his moment of bonding with Harley before his demise, which turns out to be pivotal. And
we are spoiling it, guys. We apologize. We'll try not to spoil it too much, though.
Well, he gifts her his eponymous javelin, and then tries to deliver her a message of what to do with it and dies before he can tell her. So she's trying to figure that out. And of course, when you're fighting a giant starfish creature with a huge eye, come on, people, pointy stick.
Hey, come in handy.
Do the math.
Ben, what did you think?
I really loved it and I had a lot of fun. I think, you know, when you put James Gunn in charge of this, what we've already seen with Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, it's going to be bright. It's going to be flashy. The leash was off of him a little bit more because this was an R-rated movie. So, but, you know, you have big, bright, colorful characters. You have a lot more commitment to a classic, more comic book style, especially in the case of like Peacemaker or even Javelin's costume. And a real quick comment on Flula Borg, who played Javelin. He's one of these guys that like just started off making like freaking TikTok and Instagram videos. And he's German. He's from Germany and came over to the US and it just made these really, if anybody tries to say Germans don't have a sense of humor, you can just look at Flula Borg and it's the weirdest sense of humor that you've ever seen, but he's hysterical. And he's one of those stories of the internet guy that like is now getting into movies, which is great. And it's great to see. But you know, just the casting was great. You've got Idris Elba as Bloodsport. He was fantastic. And of course, Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn. That's just, you can just print money with her. I loved Birds of Prey. I thought it was great. You know, I also hated the first Suicide Squad. I tried to get my money back after I saw it and they wouldn't give it to me, but I also smelt of whiskey, so I think they kind of wrote me off at that point. But
yeah, I fell asleep.
Music, colors, great banter, lots of blood,
and Viscera.
What?
And Viscera.
Oh, yeah. And King Shark. King Shark, voiced by Sylvester Stallone, was just fantastic. Just such a great addition. If you've ever watched the Harley Quinn cartoon, you know, King Shark is such a great character on there, and a different take on him in this movie, and it was so much fun.
You know, I really love the way that King Shark and Polka Dot Man, these things that seem like absolutely outrageous ideas to add to Suicide Squad, it just seemed natural. Like King Shark, he couldn't go into the bar. He was so, it wasn't for him. But when he found, I was telling Luke today, one of my favorite things about this movie was the way they told the inner workings, the what was going on inside each character without words. You saw things happening, like Polka Dot Man and his mom, King Shark, when he went inside the aquarium, even like Harley Quinn with all the colors and the colorful. I'm going to tell you, that scene of Harley Quinn kicking the ass of 150 people was one of my favorite superhero scenes I've ever seen in my life. And the way that James Gunn added the flowers and the color to kind of like, there was something else going on deeper than just a fight there. That to me was one of the magisterial parts of this movie, the way so much was told without words. And perhaps one of my favorite scenes when they fight their way through the jungle and kill like 50 people. And they accidentally find out it was the good guys. They killed all the good guys.
It's, we were watching that. They were halfway through the scene, and it's just brutal. It's absolutely brutal. It's Idris Elba and Peacemaker.
John Cena.
John Cena! And it's absolutely brutal. And then halfway through the scene, I was like, oh my gosh. I turned to my wife, and I said, oh my gosh, I bet this is the wrong village. This is the wrong place. They're not supposed to be here. These are the wrong people. And then they get to the end of the scene, and I was like, oh my God, they were the wrong people.
Let me ask you this. How did playing in the R-rated sandbox kind of change this movie? And not just because it was gross. What do you think? What kind of freedom did that give James Gunn to play with that made this movie perhaps a better film?
He got to make the movie he wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's my understanding is he had two conditions to Warner's to do the movie. One is the R rating, and the second to shoot in Atlanta because his father was ailing in the States and he wanted to be nearby. Right. So, but when you give a director freedom to do what he or she wants and the final product is his or her vision, it's usually much better than that compromised studio crap that DCEU movies have been afflicted with. Yeah. Even before the DCEU was a thing, because that's what happened with Green Lantern. It's like Martin Campbell rebooted Bond not once but twice with GoldenEye and Casino Royale, and they wouldn't even let him have final cut of the movie. That's pathetic.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing that I love so much is there was so much care taken to this movie. So much, you could tell that every scene, everything you were looking at, James Gunn was just lovingly crafting it. For example, the opening scenes with Michael Rooker killing the bird. Mm-hmm. And then again, we're spoiling it some. If you guys don't want to hear any spoilers, please go away. But 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then when Michael Rooker is floating dead and one of those little birds comes and it's eating his guts out of his head. I was like, poetic beauty.
Where his head used to be.
It was completely disgusting, but I was like, wow, that is so. A little bitty touch like that. I keep on noticing those things throughout this entire film. It just kept on getting me. Yeah.
Well, I think what was key and what you're to tack on to what you're saying about the R rating and how did that change how this was done? These are villains. These are people that are in prison for a very long time, if not life, that are looking for a way out. So you can't make this a PG-13. I mean, you could make it a PG-13 movie, but you have to be able to do this stuff where these people are doing horrible stuff that only villains would do, as well as, you know, horrible stuff is happening to them that you would kind of only accept from the worst of super-powered villains. Like, you would only accept that happening to them.
Right.
Also, on another side note, as a big Doctor Who fan,
yes,
seeing Peter Capaldi as the Thinker and dropping F-bombs, which I know he's done in different parts of his career, like prior to Doctor Who, but it's always funny seeing Doctor Who drop the F-bomb.
It was funny. We were watching this and Luke goes, isn't that Doctor Who that Ben likes? I'm like, yeah, Ben's. So I know there was another boost. For
I was even more general than that because I'm like, was he a Doctor Who?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was just glad to see the Thinker represented well after that terrible version of the Thinker that the Flash had on several seasons back. That was such a bad portrayal. You know, the comic book character would come to life and say, "I want to sue for defamation. Give me a good portrayal. Give me Capaldi."
All right. So as promised, we are going to keep this kind of a brief podcast. So we probably have about 8 minutes and then we're going to cut it. So we're going to shove this in. But I want you guys, if we were rating this movie, and we're going to do it right at the end, let's say we were rating it like a pizza, 10 pieces of pizza. The whole pie is the best.
Where are you getting pizza, Jim?
I'm so hungry right now. 10. The whole pie is the whole enchilada. I'm mixing my food metaphors now. And one piece is kind of down on that ladder. So be thinking about where you would rate this. But let's also talk about Cheeseman. You were pointing out some things that kind of didn't gel well with you. Why don't you say that?
Yeah, I think after the big Harley Quinn scene, spoiler alert, where she escapes and all that, that to me was like the biggest like moment of the film, where things kind of shifted in my opinion after that. Like the humor didn't seem to be as much. The music was a little less fun and a little more just kind of like low key and artsy, and didn't have that kind of like, I was expecting more like the Led Zeppelin, like Thor Ragnarok, like moment when they're all coming together, this like badass type song or something. The music kind of really fizzled after that. And then also another thing, I was just like, usually with like these Guardian movies, there's kind of, well, not as much with the second one, because you're kind of like, you were confused. If you didn't know the comics, you're confused about like Ego becoming the villain or whatever. But this one didn't seem to have just a clear villain that went from the beginning to end. It had a bunch of bad people that kind of got killed along the way. And then it's like, oh, wait, now this is kind of they're dead. And then it was just kind of like not through kind of story with that, where eventually it was like the giant, you know, starfish that they're battling off. So as like from a screenwriting standpoint, I think it's stronger when you have a clear villain throughout the whole thing, and like they did in the first Guardians.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, because they mentioned Project Starfish in the very first mission briefing at the top of the movie. And for those of us who know DC Comics and, you know what that really means, I thought they did a good, I mean, yeah, there's a little bit of bait and switch with the villains, but if you know that whatever this thing is, and the reveal that Waller is trying to prevent people from finding out the U.S. government was funding this project, and that the Team B was sent in to destroy the record versus, you know, reveal the truth. So that worked for me. I mean, it's tricky. You're dealing with supervillains and or anti-heroes, and Waller herself is an anti-hero. The other thing I hate about the first movie is Waller is stone cold, you know, she's stone cold. She's not going to kill her own people for no reason. And that just made no sense whatsoever. Now, in this movie, the way she dealt with everybody made sense. And I love when when the minions turn on her at the very end was awesome.
That was great. I've got to jump on with Luke a little bit here. And I guess since this, maybe it's the fact that this is a little bit more of a sophisticated, higher level movie, that they felt they didn't have to have a clear cut villain. And for those of us who did not know Project Starfish, the only thing I knew about Starfish was John Cena's character saying, "Isn't that the same thing as a butthole?"
That's Jim's backstory. Okay.
No, but like I enjoyed every moment all the way through, and then at the end I felt that was kind of fun, but I couldn't tell you, like, it gets squishy. What's the mission? What are you trying to do? And then there was one point where John Cena's character was fighting against, and I should have his name in front, the guy with the yellow, the tall guy. When Luke was like, "Well, who's the good guy here?" And maybe that was the point. Like, we didn't know who the good guy
was at that moment, but then they switch over and you can clearly see kind of.
Well, who was the good guy?
Other people.
Rick Flagg's the good guy.
Yeah, he didn't get his own series on HBO coming up next year.
Well, that's, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. Is this the first time where a movie has been used to set up a TV show?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of.
Well, I was going to say intentionally.
Intentionally.
Yeah, because there's been TV shows that have spun off of movies, but I don't think they've made the movie while also simultaneously having the intention of making a TV show about one of the characters from the movie. But I don't know for sure.
two of those supporting characters from the movie are in the Peacemaker show.
Mm-hmm. Who the hell else is in there?
The dude with beard and glasses, and the the blonde woman.
Okay,
that's great because the people working with Amanda, right. Waller, they really flesh them out really well in this movie. I mean, I couldn't tell you their character names, but I can remember the characters, and I've seen the guy with the glasses and the beard. I've seen him in other stuff too, and that was a lot of fun. I will jump a little bit on the Luke and Jim wagon here with a caveat. Because I'll say, you know, from a technical screenwriting perspective, it was somewhat disorganized. I would say that there, you know, the idea kind of changed once they got closer to accomplishing the goal. And so I think that's why the feel of the movie turned. And then, mm-hmm. of course, there's the mutiny with Amanda Waller and the Suicide Squad, where they decide to, no, we're going to go back and essentially do the right thing.
You're quote, being quote. Good people at that point. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, and then it, the fun kind of ramps up from there and some more really gross visuals with the aforementioned javelin and eyeball. But
that was beautiful.
Oh yeah. Oh, it was the level of CG in this film was so well done. Like, you're looking at this giant starfish, and I know it's CGI, but it looked really good. It didn't look shitty.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun, too. But
speaking of starfishes.
But it was, from a purely technical writing
perspective,
from a purely technical writing perspective, it was a little disorganized. It was a little messy. It didn't have as much through line. But I think it made up for that in really good character development, really good banter. Really well, you know, the characters themselves. Like, we got this whole backstory on Polka Dot Man. One of the most ridiculous characters in DC Comics. And there's a lot of ridiculous characters in DC Comics. I need to see Condiment King in Suicide Squad 3. That's what I need.
Yeah. Or Man-Eater Lad. I got to give a shout out. From a script standpoint, the two moments that were surprising twists both involved Harley. First, when she has the, you know, hot night of sex with the dude and then blows him away because he's an a-hole.
Guys, wait, stop. I'm going to stop you right there. That was a film by its... That was a short film. The Harley story from beginning when she was pulled out of the hole until she put a hole in his head, that was a beautiful short story. I loved it. They could have pulled that out right there.
And then when she escapes... And then the squad is there. It's like, hey, guys, what you doing? Oh, we're here to rescue you. And she's like, I can go back in if you want me to. Margot Robbie, you know, it took me a while to get on the Margot Robbie train. In fact, it took Birds of Prey to completely win me over. And I've seen a lot of her movies. But she's a force of nature. And she MVP of this movie.
I, Tanya.
Sure.
I tell you what, I, Tanya.
I, Tanya. Oh,
amazing. Yeah. All right, guys, we are coming down to our last 2 minutes. So if we had a pizza... That's the worst thing ever, but we'll get better. We had a pizza with 10 slices. Cheeseman, how many slices does this movie get?
Ooh, I would probably say maybe 7.5 pieces. You know, a few pepperonis off that, you know, eighth piece.
You're one of those people that eats half a slice of pizza and leaves it for people?
Well, no. I'll just maybe leave the crust on that one. I'd probably start to think I'm going to eat half of it. Then maybe, unless it's like a really good crust.
All right, Thomas.
I'm giving it 8.5.
And why?
8.5. Solid B. It wasn't perfect. I thought they got a little carried away with the gore. Just a little bit carried away. Yeah, it's an R rating, but seriously, dude. But no, great characterizations, fun story. Kept the. It did not feel like it was 2 hours, 50 minutes long.
Agreed.
Can I just bring up a quick point, though? Like, for some reason with rating, like, movies or IMDb and all that, I don't judge on, like, a school-type scale. Like, I wouldn't consider 7.5 pieces to be, like, a C or something like that. If I was rating, like, grade average, yeah, I'd definitely give it probably, like, a B or something like that. But for some reason, when I'm rating it, like, based more on, like, an IMDb thing. I don't know how you guys will rate, but...
You do realize that IMDb uses a 10-point scale, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I see something on IMDb with like a 7.8. I'm like, oh, that's probably a pretty good thing. You know, like, yeah. I wouldn't be like, oh, that's a C, you know.
Right. It's a C plus, but.
Well, speaking about the grower, and then we'll jump to Ben real quick. Like when the one guy was killed and you saw the shard of glass go inside his heart and puncture. I'm like, I looked at Luke and said, why are we seeing his heart beating? There must have, he didn't do that just to be gratuitous. There was a reason we had to see his beating heart. I don't know what it was.
I think it was because, you know, so much of this, you see somebody get injured horribly and then they come back, you know, like then they're back two scenes later. I think that was just to show, oh yeah, he dead. Like he is gone. He is out of this picture, literally.
Yep.
Because Ben. We also see another character who we thought was dead. If you watch to the end of the credits, not so dead.
all right. Pizza talk. All right. Ben.
Well, I might forego the pizza, but I'll say if okay. I had 5 red cups, I would give this movie 4.25 red cups. That's out of 5. 4.25 red cups out of 5, which would technically go along with the 8.5.
Math.
I would love. I loved it. I had so much fun. It was super enjoyable. I feel like DCEU movies are so hit and miss, mostly miss, but it's been the villain movies. It's like, if you told me the best movies to come out of the DCU, including Batman and Superman movies, were going to be Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and 2 movies about Harley Quinn.
Yep.
Okay, but that's weird. But I really enjoyed this, and I would put it... Oh, and Shazam. Forgot about Shazam, too. So I would put this in the same category as Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Shazam, Birds of Prey, and not in the same category as BVS or right. Suicide Squad 1 or any of those.
I do love Man of Steel, though.
Man of Steel. Man of Steel kind of floats in this direction. I don't quite like it as much, but it's more along the good movie line.
I love that Ben has his own movie rating. It's 4.5 red cups. It so fits Ben and his red cup. All right. I'm going to say that I would give, if it in the pizza ratings, I would give this film a solid 7. But if I was comparing it to the last movie, I'd give it the whole pie. It's that much better than the last one. Hey, guys, thank you so much for tuning into the Con Guy Movie Talk tonight. Cheeseman, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at CheeseOnCouch and also on theconguy.com. And also, one last thing I'd like to say as an original Batman fan, it would be awesome if they do another one and they start bringing King Tut and all these different characters that were from the old school Batman. I think there's so much room to play in this movie.
Oh, wait, last thing, 30 seconds. A lot of reports said that the movie bombed this weekend because it only made like $70 million worldwide. What say you, Ben?
We're the biggest... COVID
Delta, dude.
A year ago.
Exactly.
Of course it bombed. Nobody's going out or they're too sick to go out.
Tom, where can people find you and what do you think about that?
At BlurredPhD on Twitter and Instagram. And come on, people. There's a freaking pandemic going on and it's on HBO Max.
Exactly.
You want to go out and catch Delta and Suicide Squad or you stay home and watch HBO Max?
$70 million, since when is that a bomb? Come on now, Ben, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BenKlieWer. You can also search the hashtag, hashtag BK421. And remember, everyone, I'm drinking out of this red cup because whenever Ben Cleaver shows up, it's always a party. Woo!
Thanks for listening to The Con Guy Show, the official program of theconguy.com. Find us on the TV Geeks Collective or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And now on sci-fi.radio, Saturdays at 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific, both AM and PM. That's 9 o'clock Greenwich. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.
Welcome to Dr. Geek's Laboratory.
Dr. Geek here with another reminder that the ESO Network is pro-science and pro-vaccine. We urge you to be a superhero and protect yourself, your family, and your fellow geeks around the world. Don't be fooled by the forces of evil and their anti-science misinformation campaign. Consult the latest CDC guidelines, your doctor, and get the COVID vaccine today.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.